From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. We are so happy that you're hanging out with us. It's the second hour. We're having a ton of fun here, guys, and we get to jump right into News Roundup. Now, if anyone not familiar with the show, this is where we get to cherry pick all the other shows ahead of us. That's Seattle's Morning News, G and Ursula, Jack and Spike, and John and Sherry. And then we get to listen to everything they say. We get to try to find the dumbest things that they wish everyone would forget. No, just kidding. We just actually pick things that we are interested in, and things that they covered on all the other shows. It gives us a chance to highlight them and to show all the great work they do for you, who may not get a chance to listen to all day, every day, to Cairo. We encourage you to, and we hope you do. But we understand. You've got a life to live. You can't listen to everything. So we listen to it for you, and then we put it back up here. This is News Roundup. Let's get into it. All right. On Seattle's Morning News, they were talking about, and I should also say as a quick point of order, I don't listen to any of these before we play them here. So I'm responding to them in real time. Ooh, mysterious with you. No, it's fun. I get to listen to these with you. We get to both respond together. You guys are texting me as I'm doing these, and that's a lot of fun, too. You can get us at 888-973-5476. If you have a thought as we're doing these, text it into me. It could be 2 seconds after you text it, and if I have a chance to read it, and maybe I fold it into the commentary. Who knows? You might be radio famous. All right, 888-973-5476. And with that, let's get into News Roundup. Okay, on Seattle's Morning News, they were talking about beavers. That's all I know. Let's just play the clip.
I knew there was this crack. I thought a gun had gone off.
The sound was actually a beaver slapping its tail on the water to let her know she was in its neighborhood.
I looked and I saw, oh my God, it's filling with water. And then I saw trees were coming down over there. It was just incredible. It was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. And it was the beavers making their pond.
That was the moment Philip went from not thinking about beavers very much to becoming more or less obsessed. The result, her book, Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America.
It's just incredible the change that they bring into the land. And this is why they're called ecosystem engineers.
And in creating their own ecosystems, beavers actually do a lot for humans, slowing down water.
You guys recognize his voice? Is that Luke Burbank? Formerly of Cairo Radio fame? Now CBS? He has a podcast you guys should check out. It's called Too Beautiful to Live. They just recently celebrated their 4,000th episode. That's really amazing. And side note, I should thank Luke because when he was doing his show here at Cairo, originally it was this show, guys. You should know. The Cairo Nights slot used to be Too Beautiful to Live a few years ago, and now it's Cairo Nights. And the only reason that I have a life that I recognize now and that I love is because my wife, who also worked in the building at the time, she worked for My Northwest, she really liked Too Beautiful to Live. She loved it. She loved that show. And she was an intern on the show. And she would come in and she would help and all that kind of stuff. So what I did, because I was super smart and desperately in puppy love, I was working here as a producer at the time. This is about 15, 16 years ago. And I was working as a producer and I would just stay really late. That show ran from 7 to 10. My shift got off at, I think the show I was on at the time ended at 6, which means that I waited around until for 4 hours so that I could try to hang out with the girl who would eventually become my wife. And that was time well spent, very well spent. And I had a chance to get to know her, and I have Luke Burbank to thank for that. I'm assuming it's the same Luke Burbank. I think it is. Anyway, thanks, Luke. Keep telling us about beavers.
Flow and creating wider, wetter environments.
It's so dry out there. That's fuel. Like, that is fire fuel. And then you get into here, and I mean, the water, it's not going to burn.
Emily Fairfax is assistant professor at the University of Minnesota, where she studies beavers, often in the bone dry and sometimes wildfire prone West.
If you look at these plants, if you pinch...
You know what? I'm going to pause it real fast. I just remembered something else, and I apologize, you guys. I'm just stomping all over this audio. And it's a great piece, so thank you, Luke, and thank you, beavers. But Luke had actually pulled me aside. I remember I was a young producer here. Luke was running his show. I think he could see from a distance that I was just, you know, obviously staring at Jamie all the time. That's my wife's name. And I think he pulled me aside at some point. And he goes, hey, you know what? You should ask her out. You should talk to, you should. Here's the other thing. I wasn't actually like talking to her. I was just staring at her from a great distance. And he's like, hey, you know what you should do? You should try talking to the girl. That might move things along a little bit. And so I took his advice and I did. And I asked her out and she said she was busy. So I asked her out again. She was busy again. She had a very full calendar back then. And eventually she agreed to go out with me. Quickly thereafter, she fell in love after many, many more dates. And we got married. Now we have three kids and we've been married for, you know, almost 13 years. So good stuff. All right, Luke, let's finish the story about beavers.
Them. They are so full of water. The tissues are green and lush and they're not withering. They're not crinkly. And like, that's hard to burn. You don't want to start a fire with wet material. And this is obviously very wet.
You're pretty certain there are beavers here because, of course, we have a dam, we have a lodge, but we also have, what did you just find?
I just found a beaver poop. And so these really highlight what beavers eat and what they don't eat, because if you look carefully, it's just plant material. It's just sawdust, like a little sawdust marshmallow, and it's pretty fresh. So we know the beavers have been here working recently because they're leaving poops in the water.
You really just handed me a beaver turd?
I did. Welcome to the field.
I don't know if you guys knew this about me either, but back when I was in college, during the summer times, my job when I came home was I got hired to work for the sewer district in the small town where I was raised and where I lived, where my parents lived. And I didn't work in the sewers, as it sounds. It was actually the sewer/water district. And so my job was to go around to all the different little rivers and tributaries and streams and keep them cleared of beaver dams. And they're building those dams at a frightening rate. You would be shocked at how quickly a beaver can build up a dam. And basically, my job was to make sure that the river, because the little rivers and streams ran into the lake, and then the lake's level was determined by how much water was coming in and going out. So when the beavers would dam up these things for fish and whatever beavers are doing in there, I don't know, they would ruin the level of the lake. And then it starts drifting up into people's docks and people's shoreline. It was a real big stress. And all thanks to these amazing little furry creatures, which get really big, by the way. I don't know if you guys know how big a beaver can get. Over 100 pounds. Imagine you're in the water and you got a 100-pound beaver coming at you with those teeth and that fat tail just slapping. Ugh, very scary stuff. All right, we got more to get to, so let's jump over to G and Ursula. We're talking about a Cash App. What's a Cash App?
Let me set the scene. On social media, have you guys seen someone says, hey, it's my birthday? And then all of a sudden you either see a QR code or you see them with their Cash App name or Venmo name, and they're basically soliciting cash for their birthday. If you have seen that, great. If you haven't, let me tell you what's going on. That is happening. And so yesterday, my neighbor that I grew up with, her child, I hope she ain't listening, her child turned 17 years old. And when she turned 17, hey, wish my child happy birthday. Here's his Cash App. And put the little tag on there and everything. And boom, posted it. And so I sent it to you guys and I said, we need to talk about it. Number one, I'm never giving to any of that, ever. Number two, it makes me so mad every time I see it. You'd be better off putting a GoFundMe page up by saying, hey, I need money because I stubbed my toe on the corner of my couch. I will give to that. I'm not giving to your birthday with the whole Cash App and Venmo. I think it's tacky.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack, only because there's so many different ways people are coming at us with requests for money.
Yes.
And some I happily give. I really do. I will give to some GoFundMes where I don't know the person, I don't know the family, but I read their story and their situation and I think, well, I'm in a position where I can help out and I would want to help out.
Sure.
And so that is one thing. Even though I know that there are issues that come up with GoFundMe, again, I will never lump everybody in one bucket.
You know, I got to say, a Cash App, I totally agree. I think that is tacky. I don't like it. I was driving down the road the other day, and I saw somebody had posted one of these QR codes on the back of their car, and it said, just graduated, and then it was a QR code where somebody could take a picture, and your phone automatically goes to a donation page where you could just give that person money. And, you know, I don't know if this person actually just graduated, and I don't care. It's a pretty low bar to hit. A lot of people graduate. Most people listening right here have graduated high school. I'm not going to give some random person money just because they graduated high school. It's really interesting, though, that we're in this technological space where you can do that. You can just spread that around and say, give me money. And I'm wondering, I would be interested to find out how successful those are, how much money they're actually making. Is that like, obviously they do it and they keep doing it and people must be making money at it. I mean, the business has to support itself somehow. And the business probably takes a percentage, I'm imagining, of whatever people are donating to these campaigns. Like a GoFundMe campaign, I think GoFundMe for facilitating the site that people can build themselves and send around to folks to donate to their cause. I think GoFundMe keeps whatever percentage it is, 5%, 10%, I don't know what it is, some percentage. So clearly these Cash Apps are doing the same thing. And that's very interesting that people are doing that. Although I bet you they would have a problem standing on the side of the road with a sign that said, please, can I have money? Like you see all the time on the road. I bet you those same people who are asking, but is it any different? No, it's no different. It's the exact same. One is just, you're hiding behind your QR code. The other one is you're putting your face out there. You're standing on the side of the road. I guess in that case, the person standing on the side of the road is actually doing something. They're actually out there. I mean, they're not actually doing something, but they're actually out there spending the time. This QR code is just being sent around social media and nobody's even having to lift a finger and you're just having money pour in. I can't imagine they're actually making any money off those. I don't think so. All right. Let's see what Jack and Spike were talking about. Electric vehicles.
The green agenda, the veiled, thinly veiled attack on energy independence in America is a driving paramount false flag voice of the far left. America was built on the mobility and independence garnered by the internal combustion engine and the automobile industry, not to mention the fact that America's fuel independence is paramount to not only our economy, but our national security.
So the funny thing here is obviously Spike, I'm shocked at what he's saying, and I'm shocked in how much a lot of it I agree with. So I'm assuming this is the devil's advocate segment. Matt, am I right? Devil's advocate. Okay, that's right. They're taking the opposite sides that they normally would take. All right, let's get back to it.
This is, a poorly veiled attempt to break the United States away from its traditional financial stability, independence, and leadership by making Americans believe that the automobile is the reason for every problem we have facing our world today with regard to climate. It's the automobile's fault.
Well, that's clearly an argument that a fascist would make. And as someone who is staunchly anti-fascist, what's clear to me is that this is a people are waking up to the fact that the thing that they have been addicted to for so long, the internal combustion engine, is in fact one of the things that is leading to their very demise. We are literally destroying this planet in order to remove dinosaur juice from the ground so that we can all have a quote unquote cheap mode of transportation. But much in the same way how someone with a toothache doesn't necessarily want to go to the dentist, so they continue to take their Vicodin, eventually you've become so dependent on the thing that you are unwilling to realize that there's a simple solution right in front of you. Electric vehicles provide a safe alternative to oil and gasoline. The batteries are constructed in such a way that makes them last significantly longer than an internal combustion engine. And on top of all of that, Mr. O'Neill, we can see that the economic powerhouse behind, or the economic momentum is behind, electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles.
You know, I read a really interesting article about electric vehicles. There's an author who decided to test one out, and they said, you know what? I'm going to take one of these on a road trip and I'm going to see how that goes. And it did not go well. It was a bit of a stressful headache. You know, the infrastructure for electric vehicles is still something that's going to be difficult to get fully put in place. And until that happens, people got to get around. They have to be able to get around at an affordable rate. And right now, gas is doing it. I don't like the price of gas right now. It doesn't need to be this high. I think it's ridiculous. We talked about it on the other day on the show. We talked about how in California right now, they're paying more than $6 a gallon for gas in certain cities. San Francisco, I think at Los Angeles, was paying like $6.15 a gallon. That's not far off from what we're paying here. I paid $5.15 the other day for gas just so I could get into work. And I'm just sitting there going like, man, this is really starting to add up. That's a lot of money. Now, I'm not a person who can just go out and spend the amount of money I would need to on an electric vehicle and also to get the car charger to put into my house so I can speedily charge it up. That all costs money. And I think the average electric vehicle, when you purchase it, takes about 10 years before it actually starts making you money again, before the difference in cost between that and a gas-powered vehicle is realized. That's not always going to be the case, and I understand that. And eventually, they're hopefully going to get that price down, and people are going to be able to use something like an EV when it suits them. But it doesn't have to be the only thing. We don't have to switch to them immediately. So yeah, that's an interesting topic. I'm glad they brought it up. Thank you guys for bringing that up, Jack and Spike. Always interesting. They do a lot of back and forth where like they'll take one side and the other one will take the other, and then they just argue it out. So if you like hearing arguments, tune in, and they got some good stuff on that show. All right, let's hear this last one. John and Sherry, we're talking about porn. What is this? No, a candidate porn star. All right, I think I know what the story is, but let's let them explain it.
Right. People want a loving couple to be in whatever position it is when elected. So like, for instance, this gal in Virginia, she deeply, deeply loves her husband in a very passionate way. And if you'd like, you can watch her do that on video. She's a nurse practitioner, and she's running in the 57th or something there in Virginia in near Richmond. And somebody has found out that she was up on a porn website where you could buy tokens and then ask her to perform live performances, you know, showing how much she's committed to her husband. And then she got extra tokens. And where she took some of the extra money or something like that and put it towards her campaign, is that why she's in trouble? It's not for what she was doing, was it?
No, she violated the terms of the porn site because she told viewers that she would perform certain things in a private room if they paid her more. And you can't solicit like that, I guess, during the act or whatever it is. So you can't ask for more money.
Yeah, that's where they draw the line. Hold on a second. I will desecrate and belittle myself in every way, except if you want me to do that, that's going to cost you even more money. Is that what it is?
Yeah. I mean,
I think your husband fell. It's like, honey, what? Really? I mean, it's just me. Why you got to get more money? That? It's me. The guy sort of standing there going, I guess I'm really gross or something now.
Well, I don't know that what they were requesting. So maybe it was something that really deserved more money. I don't know.
I actually read a little bit into this, what the people were requesting. And all I can say is I can't read it to you on the air, and I can't even describe it to you. So just imagine in your head what that might be, and I think you got it. All right, we have covered all the different shows, so that's what they were talking about. Thanks for joining us on News Roundup, everyone from other shows. Pleasure to have you. We have a lot more to cover here on this show, so stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have made no secrets. One of my great shames in life, one of my great shames is I've never been to Vegas. I flew through there once when I was on my way back from Texas. Stop over in Vegas, and I looked at the strip from however far away the airport is. I went over. I just wanted to be able to say that I'd gambled in Vegas. I think I was around 21 at the time. So I went over to one of the slot machines in the airport, and I popped in a dollar or whatever it was, and I hit the button, and bling, 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 bling. Loser. Didn't make any money. That's probably pretty smart that I haven't been able to go and gamble, because gambling is something that I enjoy doing very much. Not that much, not like a sinister amount where my voice needs to change. But yeah, Vegas is something that I've never really experienced. So I have never gotten to see the glitz and the glamour and the gaudiness of the strip, which has really just gotten over the top. I was reading this article about this new building called the Fontainebleau, or the Fontainebleau. I don't know how you pronounce it. The Fontainebleau Palace. It's going to be 67 stories tall. That's just one hotel, 67 stories tall. It's in the middle of Las Vegas. Apparently, it's been in the process of being built or in some version of trying to get approval and permits and all this stuff, as you can imagine. Anybody who's ever built anything understands that it's really tough to get things built. Imagine building something 67 stories tall, 3,644 hotel rooms. It will be the tallest hotel on the strip. It's being built by a billionaire named Jeff Soffer. And a couple of other things about this hotel that look kind of interesting. It's got 7 swimming pools, 36 restaurants and bars. It's just phenomenal looking. I've seen the artist rendering, the sketch. It's going to have like an entire indoor area. And of course, the outdoor area pool is just insanity. Maybe in a good way, I guess. This is just something that I've never experienced. I've never experienced hotels on this size, but I've always been really interested in Vegas. But I think I long for old Vegas. And it reminded me of the story. I read this really interesting book. There's a guy by the name, he's passed away since. He passed away a couple years back, and he was named Kirk Kerkorian. And I read a book about his life. He was a self-made billionaire, and he had this really famous fight on the Las Vegas Strip with another famous Vegas individual. And the old Vegas is so appealing to me. It's so interesting. This is, of course, it's just like smacks of Sinatra and the Rat Pack and all the cool stuff that used to happen. Pictures of the Sands.
The Sands is proud to present a wonderful new show, A Man and His Music. The music of Count Basie and his great band. And the man is Frank Sinatra.
This is from 1968, Sinatra performing with Count Basie at the Sands Hotel.
How did all these people get in my room? Come fly with me, we'll fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on, fly with me.
Isn't Vegas cool? I mean, like the Vegas in my head, the Vegas in my memory of what Vegas should look like or did look like. Again, I've never actually stepped foot on it. I don't know how it's in my head and in my memory. What I've seen in the movies and pictures. So this reminded me of a story I read about, though. This Kirk Kerkorian guy that I was just mentioning a second ago, he got in this big land battle, essentially, on either side of the Las Vegas Strip with Howard Hughes. And this is in 1968, the same time that this recording took place with Sinatra and Count Basie. And basically, what happened was Howard Hughes, obviously he doesn't need much of an introduction, but he's a famed billionaire himself and industrialist and all around heck of an interesting guy. He was living at the time at the top of the Desert Inn, and he made this big flashy announcement that he was going to build a 4,000-room addition to the Sands Hotel. Now, this is where this recording is taking place. You can hear there again here.
Come on, fly with me. We'll fly.
Back in 1968, you didn't need $3.7 billion, which is what that new hotel is going to cost. You only needed $150 million. That's what Howard Hughes said he was going to do. He was going to invest $150 million to expand the Sands Hotel. And when he did so, he was going to add 4,000 rooms. Now, as it turns out, the only reason he said he was going to add 4,000 rooms is because across the street, this upstart, he wasn't young at the time, but he was younger than Howard Hughes. His name was Kirk Kerkorian, self-made billionaire. Wasn't a billionaire at the time, but had a lot of money. He was going to build his own hotel called the International. And the International was going to have 1,500 rooms. And basically, it's a big deal to introduce new hotel rooms onto a strip like this. You know, can the economy support 4,000 rooms, 1,500 new rooms? So the idea was that Howard Hughes was actually trying to scare him off. So the two of them basically just had a, I'm not going to use a bad term for it, but they had a certain type of a contest where the two of them just tried to outdo each other. And eventually, Krikorian ended up building his hotel, which ended up being a smash hit, a big success, and for a long time was kind of the place to be on the Las Vegas Strip. Howard Hughes ended up never building his hotel. What he did was he just released these press releases, which sounded really great, and he had the money to do it if he wanted to. But in the end, it was just kind of a lot of bloviating, and he didn't end up actually building anything. So that's kind of one that I was just interested in that. I mean, history does always kind of tend to repeat itself. I mean, this story about a $3.7 billion Las Vegas hotel that's going to be built with 4,000 rooms, and it's not the first time it's happened. Anyway, I haven't been to Vegas. I still want to go, and if anybody wants to go to Vegas, let me know. I might have a free weekend coming up soon. I can go do some gambling. All right, we're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
And don't tell your papa.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Do you ever go to weddings? Do you have kids? Those two things don't usually go well together. I don't know why. I think weddings, obviously, are a wonderful thing. And I think that a kid at a wedding is classic. Flower girl, ring bearer, whatever. And it's a nice thing, you know? I mean, weddings are usually about, like, new families and new life and all of that. But at some point in the last few years, there has just been this, or maybe it's always been the case. I'm just aware of it now because I've now experienced enough weddings that I've noticed the trend. However, it seems to me that kids are kind of persona non grata at weddings. And I can't say as I completely blame brides or grooms for wanting to have a child-free wedding. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? I'd be interested to see your take on this. 888-973-5476. You can hit me up on the text line. I definitely have gone to my share of weddings where they have a lovely invite and they send you the save the date and you go, oh, wonderful, save the date. Also, quick side note, I don't understand that whole industry. There's a save the date, which is a pre-wedding invite, but it's not the invite. The invite comes later. I don't really understand this. Why not just send the invite when you know you're going to set the date and people can know to do it? Just send the invite and you're done. The extra step is just my, I feel like that's a wedding venue or I feel like that's a wedding coup that they're getting people to pay for save the dates when it's not even the official invite. Anyway, that doesn't matter. It's just stupid. I digress. But the point of the story is there was a woman who recently was getting married. And she decided, she understands a lot of people can't attend your wedding because they have kids or it's tough to find sitters or whatever it is. And so she said, you know what? I have a great idea. I really want people to come and enjoy my nuptials. These people are important people in my life. I want them to see me walk down the aisle. So she sent out, she detailed what she had decided to do on Reddit, which I'm interested in your response to this. Again, this is 888-973-5476. Is this a good idea? Because I feel like her intentions were good, but there is one key flaw that I think ended up harpooning the entire idea. And I'm going to get to that reaction in just a second, but I will first present to you her best intentions. She posted this thing on Reddit, and this was just a couple days ago she posted this. She said, I got married this summer, and while I wanted a child-free wedding, I realized that this would exclude a lot of my friends and family, and so I came up with what I thought was a good compromise. I rented out my brother's indoor playground and I paid the staff to work late. Basically, I paid them double time until midnight, whether there were kids there or not. They are all trained in first aid, and they've all been screened by the police. I guess I'm assuming that these people work there. And so as part of this, you know, condition of their working, they had to get screened. That makes total sense. So she's doing a good job so far. On top of that, several of the older kids that didn't want to go to the reception said that they would stay there as well as keep an eye on everything. And there was two ladies that were going to be there from my church. So, I mean, she's talking about having ladies from church. This already sounds like a great idea. I trust those ladies, right? Isn't that good? And I'm also going to be providing food and drinks for the kids. So this sounds pretty good. You got somebody who's going to watch your kids. You got some teenagers who are good at the job, who've been screened by the police, who you know you can trust because this is how they're employed. This is how they make their money, is entertaining kids. Kids are going to have a blast. Kids don't want to get dressed up and go to a wedding. They don't want to sit there as people make speeches and watch all the adults get drunk on cheap champagne. They just want to have fun, and they want to throw things around. That's what kids want to do. That's so a park like this, an indoor playground, sounds great. So then she moves into the problem that was getting a strong reaction. The problem is that the playground was about 2 miles away from the reception. All right, so as a parent, I can tell you this is immediately a red flag for me. And if me and my wife are going to go to a wedding and somebody says, we're going to have childcare for your kids so that you can enjoy the reception and have a great time, in the ideal scenario, my wife and I are able to do that, and it's somewhere on site, which doesn't seem like it would be very hard. I don't know, set up a tent or something like that that the kids can play in, little yard or whatever, you know, put up an umbrella. They're not going to get cold. Depends on the time of year, I guess. So she goes on and she says, basically, you had to choose between leaving your kids there or bringing them with you. I figured that it was a good option for anyone with kids that might get rowdy. Anyone with infants obviously wouldn't leave them there. So she's being fairly generous here, actually. I didn't know that when I read this originally, that she was saying, bring your infants. A lot of times people are saying, no infants. Don't bring your infants. They scream and they cry and they whine and they take attention away from the bride, which is the opposite thing, the opposite of what you want to do on your wedding day. So she goes on here. Now she talks a little bit about the reaction. She says, boy, was I wrong. People were mad that it was so far away, about a 5-minute drive. They were mad that the kids didn't get the same food as the people at the reception. No, they got pizza, nachos, and fried chicken. That sounds pretty good. I'd want that at a reception. It's usually chicken or fish. They were mad that I didn't have somebody to watch nursing babies. I was cool with people bringing babies to the reception. There was a mother's room at the hall for nursing and changing for babies. I've been called all kinds of names for what I honestly thought was a nice thing. My husband said we should have just gone child-free and dealt with the hate instead of wasting money on this. My aunt actually called me a bleephole for not wanting a couple of dozen of screaming and crying kids at the reception. I have to say, in the end, I think I come down on the side of supporting the bride and groom in this case. I think she tried all she could to make this work, and I think she went out of her way. Most people don't offer free childcare for coming to their wedding. They just say, come to my wedding, leave your kid at home. And usually people do. All right, we're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.